Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking about the education technology space, what others refer to as EdTech. This has been one of those industries that has really been on the rise over the last year or so. One could argue that it's been on the rise for decades now because people have been doing online courses for quite some time, especially when you think about companies such as Coursera, Udemy, and all that. But in the last year or two, because of the pandemic, it's really been thrust into the fore because so many learners had to switch over to remote learning powered by the internet. We've seen a lot of money going towards education technology companies. I think the largest company on the JSE, being Naspers, actually used to have its business going along classifieds, food delivery, and fintech, but recently they have defined education technology as a serious area of investment for them, with a big deal earlier this year, $1.8 billion on an edtech company, and they also are investors in Udemy. And all of those different actions, I think we've previously on this platform had discussions with the founders of Go One, which was recently found to be the first startup in South Africa to be valued at over $1 billion, making it a unicorn, and that's an education technology company. So all of this attention in the space, but for today we are going to be getting into it with John Shaw, who is the CEO of Teneo, just to get a sense of what's actually going on out there in the space, some of the things that they're seeing on the ground, maybe talking about what type of place EdTech can have in terms of creating a path for education in the country, but at the same time what type of how does it affect quality for learning outcomes. And also we've spoken about the investment bit, how all of that is happening. To get started, John, how are you today?
I'm Adiwa. I'm very well, thank you, and thank you for having me on your show.
So Teneo, can you tell us a little bit about that? What is it that you guys are doing, and I guess what's your interest in this particular space when it comes to EdTech?
To start with, our mission is to democratize education. So that means that we are wanting to broaden the base of opportunity for students out there. We started in 2018. We had 85 students. We now have close to 9,000 students. And at the rate of enrollment that we're at the moment, we expect to have over 20,000 students by the end of January. We've got three curriculums that we provide school in line with. So we have CAPS NSE curriculum, that's the public school curriculum. We have an IB curriculum, which is independent schools. And we have an international curriculum, which is accredited by Pearson EdXL. We are the only organization in South Africa that delivers live timetabled lessons. A really, really important differentiator. All of the other organizations that you've spoken about, they function in the after-school market. That means, after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean that in relation to traditional school. It's not timetabled. And they are mainly asynchronous, not live. So that's our main differentiator. We also have after-school solutions in terms of tutors and maths programs. But that is primarily our differentiator, is live timetable classes with real teachers every day.
So when it comes to that, just a quick follow-up on our end is, why did you guys decide to, set it up that way, especially given the fact, exactly what you've pointed out, that in a lot of cases, people have tended to go for online courses because of the fact that it's something that happens, you know, after 2 o'clock, as you put it, you know, that people can learn at their own pace and in their own time. Why the timetabled, you know, approach? Is that a way to sort of replicate that in-class sort of feel?
Yes, so we're providing real school online. We're attracting students from traditional school environments right now, and they're looking for the flexibility of working from home. The future of work is from home. So we're introducing them to the skill sets that they will require, which are independently minded, curious, problem solvers. We're looking to inculcate a mindset that will enable them to function well in the future.
All right. So when we get into, you know, some of the issues around online education, from what you can see from your purview, what do you say to, you know, people about the quality of education that comes out from an online environment? Because a lot of parents out there still would prefer to have their children in class, you know, so that they can get that in-class experience, they can get the benefit of, you know, making friends, one-on-one time with teachers, you know, that type of thing. So from that point of view, what do you make of some of those criticisms or some of those concerns that are raised about, you know, having a purely online learning sort of environment?
But online learning has better outcomes. Research has shown. It's more focused. It's normally in a learning management system that holds all the content. The lessons are recorded for replay. So the outcome is likely to be significantly better in an online environment. Online also does not have the traditional social, negative social issues that occur in a traditional classroom environment, like bullying, and things like that. So this is an optimum solution for the vast majority of students. They sit in a class, they meet their fellow students, they meet the teacher talks with them, their colleagues talk, share stuff with them. So this is real school from home. It's exactly the same thing as you would find in a traditional schooling environment.
All right. And from that point of view then, because you said the learning outcomes have been proven, at least from a research point of view, to be better online. Is it appropriate? And I think this is another concern, you know, that people have raised. Is it appropriate to have a remote learning situation from, I guess, primary level, or what does the data say about the levels at which students can actually take on something like online learning for themselves, or where it's most effective, or do you find that it's effective across the board?
So, wherever you are in the grades, parent involvement is really important. And if you think about 200 years ago, the parents were the teachers, and that evolved into school. And I think we are now going back to the situation where parents are more involved. What I'm getting to is that in the early grades, the parent would have to be much more involved than in the later grades. In the later grades, students are able to work independently, but in the earlier grades, they're not mature enough to do that. So all along, we need parent involvement, and the best success is when we have the student, the parent, and us collectively involved, engaged in the outcome. In our solution, we have what we call observer logins for parents, so parents are able to monitor and manage and observe everything that their children are doing. It is the most transparent solution that you'll find. In a traditional school environment, parents don't really know what goes on in a class. In our environment, they can actually sit there and watch themselves. So to answer the question, in the early grades, the parents need much more involvement than they do in the later grades. But we want parents to be involved in all grades.
If I may ask, because you guys now have grown as much as you have, I think you said 9,000 students now, and you're on track to even get to double that number by next year, you know, which is quite tremendous growth, I guess, testament to the growth in the sector as highlighted earlier on. What informed your initial decision to start Tineo? Because I'm thinking you said you started in 2018, right? If someone was to start something in online education today, the trends are obvious, right? The writing is on the wall, right? It would make sense. But 2 years before the pandemic necessitated the situation that we're in, what were you seeing that said, okay, fine, this might be an area that we should actually get into and we could possibly, you know, really scale over time?
We saw it as an opportunity to democratize education. South Africa has particular challenges in terms of the delivery of education, and online created the opportunity of dealing with those challenges. And one of those challenges is teachers. So we're able to employ teachers from anywhere in South Africa. We have no location barriers. So a teacher could be in Cape Town, Durban, Johannesburg, Pretoria, or also in some small town like Ellisruths or Grantfort or other smaller towns across South Africa. So we're really able to harness the educational IP that we have in South Africa and bring it to students wherever they might be. And students are literally all over South Africa. So we thought at that time that this was an opportunity for us to make a difference to the education landscape in South Africa.
All right. You know, it's actually been quite interesting to see the growth of, you know, this space over time. And I think the one point that you just brought out right now about democratizing education does bring up one of the realities of where we sit in South Africa, the socioeconomic challenges, because as much as the research can tell us that learning outcomes are better in an online environment, and at the same time, it does do a lot to increase access to education. A lot of people, you know, in the country still don't have access to computing. They don't have access to affordable broadband. And then at the same time, just the computing devices themselves, as much as smartphone penetration is high in a country like South Africa, you know, things like laptops, tablets and the like still are out of reach for many South Africans. So from that point of view, when it comes to, I guess, addressing a national issue like the state of education, you know, what do you make of some of those factors that are a reality in South Africa?
I think it's going to require a massive public-private partnership with enormous will from the public sector, and the public sector needs to stop building schools and increase technology infrastructure. And we need to stop seeing the solution as another school or a resource in some rural area that may not be equipped to deliver the solution. So we think that the opportunity is in public-private partnerships, and we need to mobilize an enormous amount of funding. And if we set a goal for that, we will solve this problem. The government, by the way, has a project in place at the moment called the E3 initiative, whereby they aim to have solved the unemployment crisis by 2035. But that's still a long way away, and almost a generation will miss the opportunity. So we think that this needs to be fast-tracked. We think that it needs to be coordinated from many different resources and stakeholders, and we then have the opportunity of solving this. If you think about it, the only way to solve the unemployment crisis in South Africa is through education, so that people are no longer selling their labor, their hands. We need to get to a point where they're selling their intellectual property. That means they've learned how to do something and are able to sell that skill.
It is an interesting paradigm shift that would need to happen, those public-private partnerships, but also at the same time getting to a situation where we do shift that mindset. I like what you said earlier on about, you know, stopping to build schools, but actually finding ways, to actually increase, you know, access on that other side, because, I guess the scaling factor is a bit easier and better. But I want to just, you know, focus on that issue of scale for a moment, because you guys have been able to rapidly grow, you know, over the time that you have, and you're on set to, actually double the number of students that you're catering to at the moment. How has that experience been? You know, sometimes in business, you know, people want to get as many customers as possible. But at a certain point when you're now growing really quickly, some people in business now start facing the problem of growing too fast, you know. So from that point of view, how are you feeling about where Tenel is and the progress that you guys have been able to make and where you guys are going? Do you think your systems will be able to handle where things are going and the trajectory that you're on?
Madhua, we're in our best space ever from a scalability perspective. We've had difficult moments in the past where our systems have not coped with the number of students that we've enrolled, but we now have implemented new scalable systems. In theory, we could have 1 million students on board. The bottleneck would be teachers, but we could comfortably get to 20,000 or 50,000 students. We've got recruitment processes in place. We're a preferred employer. We get teachers applying to us almost every day, and we have a recruitment process that facilitates the onboarding of new teachers easily and quickly, remembering that they probably came from environments that are more traditional, where they're standing in front of classes. But more importantly, as you mentioned, systems are the key to the success. And we have scalable student information systems and scalable learning management systems. So we have systems that are able to cope with high scale at the moment. And we've got a management team in place that has worked through those difficult moments in the past where we've onboarded high numbers of students. We're now confident that we're able to cope with scale.
One of the things that I'm then curious about, because you guys have been able to grow as much as you have, we mentioned earlier on that online education technology is becoming increasingly a hot space for investment at the moment. Where are you guys in your funding journey? Are there investors sniffing around wanting to get in on the type of growth that you guys have been able to achieve? How are things on that, you know, on that front?
We've recently had a round with investors very successfully. So we are currently well positioned for growth and scale. And we have a strong income statement and balance sheet. So we are able to grow. But I think your question is, the motivation of our investors. I think that we all aligned in that we are democratizing education. So we are wanting to bring education to a broader base so that we, to some degree are able to contribute to, changing people's lives in South Africa.
And when it comes to that investment, because as you said, you guys have, being able to raise some money. I'm not sure whether you're comfortable to share, you know, how much you've been able to raise, but where do you intend to actually throw, those resources? Is it getting more teachers? Is it developing courses? Is it marketing to get, you know, more people on the platform? Is it, data centers? Is it programmers? Where are you, plowing your resources as a way to be able to actually scale?
So growth creates some resource challenges in terms of financial, so cash, and also in terms of teachers and systems and all of those things. So we've really deployed that across the board. We still have a strong balance sheet, so we are careful with our deployment, but we are able to deploy them in the areas where there's been pressure. So, you know, debtors creates challenges, new teachers coming on board at 100 a month creates challenges, the digital technologies that we use create challenges. So we've used it across the board, and we don't expect to need to require any further funding from what we've recently done. We have a profitable income statement and a strong balance sheet. So we're well positioned right now to take advantage of the growth opportunity around us.
As we come to the end of this discussion, John, I'm very curious because as a geek myself, anything to do with technology, I'm usually, there for it. But, you know, for yourself, before 2018, how did you actually end up starting something like Tenel? Were you always in education or were you in some other space? And did you ever anticipate that it would grow at the rate that it has at the moment?
That's really interesting, Madiwa. Yeah, I was involved in an HR business. We had an executive search division. We consulted in reward, you know, how do you pay people? How do you incentivize people? And we also consulted in general HR stuff. I got a call from someone in the UK who asked me whether I'd be interested. This is in 2017. Whether I'd be interested in representing them in South Africa. They had a product, a learning management product. I said yes. Wasn't really sure what they were talking about. They sent me the code. I needed to set it up. I had a friend who set it up. And inside of that learning management system, I found a virtual classroom. And I thought, wow, this is the future of education in South Africa. The product wasn't right for education. It was a corporate solution, but the idea was magnificent. And that was the beginning. We found a name. We found the name Tenel. We researched, came up with it. It's got something to do with education in Greek, in the Greek history. In 2018, we had 10 teachers and about 35 students on day one. So it's been a remarkable journey. We are all blessed, and we all think that. I mean, our 450 teachers who will increase in numbers to probably 1,000 by January. So we have a remarkably loyal, engaged team, and collectively, collaboratively, we've been able to make magic.
That's actually a great story to actually see, that something that, something so unexpected that you happen to stumble upon, has worked out, the way that it has, for you guys. But you guys are one player and there's other players that we've mentioned at the moment. I guess, as we, you know, round up the discussion, one of the big question then becomes, people shifted to a lot of online education because of the pandemic. But even before the pandemic, there was a lot of online learning that was already happening, just not at the rate that it was. And for a lot of, and in a lot of cases, it was, a lot of after school sort of courses, people that want to do further learning, maybe professional courses, that type of thing. So in the future, where we're now post pandemic, people do have the option to return, physical classrooms, etc. The question then becomes, how much of the growth in the space, how much of the growth in the space that we're in at the moment is fundamental versus that which, versus that which is just temporary, right? How much of this will remain? I think that's the core question, you know, to say, will people still be looking at online education the way they are now in a couple of years? And is it even realistic to think of a world that is fully online learning, one day in the future?
So, COVID has accelerated the future. It has normalized, online learning. Zoom has become a household name which was not heard of prior to COVID, and they are the major player in online meetings. So our view and our current experience is that we will continue to grow at the pace that we are. Parents are looking for sophisticated solutions where they're able to actively engage in their child's education. And that's what online does. It's transparent. It has the resources to engage with parents. So we are of the opinion that there's a great deal of change happening at the moment, and this is sustainable for us as we are right now.
All right. So it will be an interesting one just to see where things go. That was us with John Shaw, who is the CEO of Teneo, just giving us some insight into what the world of online education is looking like. At the moment, they have a service, where they're actually offering, you know, live learning courses that are timetabled. And he's saying this is one of their biggest differentiators because, most of the time when people learn, it tends to be within their own time, but they're doing live sessions and they're doing them according to a timetable so that it does in essence become a virtual classroom. Talking about the amount of investor interest that is actually happening in the space, they themselves have actually been able to attract investment to recently closing a funding round, you know, which he says is actually going to be used for them to be able to build out their systems, make them a little bit more robust, so that they can cope with the anticipated growth. And speaking of that anticipated growth, they are actually estimating, you know, that they are looking to double, their learner count in the coming months. And he says that they want to continue growing, from that point of view. And they really do see this as something that will be sort of here to stay and not something that has been, you know, a flash in the pan. John, thank you so much for being with us today.
Madhua, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
This is Madhua's Take.
There's no doubt that online education is here to stay, and with the change that COVID has presented, it's something that's fundamentally set to change how learners conduct their classes for the foreseeable future. But going forward, it will be quite a stretch to say that we will find ourselves in a purely online sort of learning environment, because as much as the learning outcomes are said to be better from a research point of view, parents and children alike still value what it means to have that personal interaction. There's actually been a rise, for example, in a lot of kids that were in day school actually moving over to boarding schools, because during COVID, people were learning at home, parents became teachers. But in as much as parents are becoming teachers, there was also a lot of butting of heads because of, you know, online learning. So as good as it is, it does have its drawbacks. What we cannot deny is the fact that investment in this space is definitely necessary, just so that we can actually change what it means to learn. So in future, a hybrid of some sort is likely to be what we see, you know, going forward. An element of in-person classes, an element of in-person learning, an element of one-on-one interactions with lecturers, teachers, and tutors, but at the same time being able to go further with the online learning bit. I remember when I was in university, that was one of the first times that I had to take on some element of online learning, and it was a really good add-on to what was going in class. So that ability to learn online is not going anywhere, but how we go about it is the conversation that people do need to have, because a pure online environment, as we've seen it through COVID, might not be sustainable for a lot of people on one end, but at the same time, it does continue to be out of reach for a lot of South Africans who don't have access to things like data, to smartphones, laptops, and at the same time, just simple access to the internet. So we will be keen to get someone like John back onto the platform just to talk about what the progress has been like, because the interest will keep growing. But at the same time, it will be good to see how the space evolves, how learners will adapt to the space, and how teachers themselves and curriculums will shift to all of this stuff. But at the same time, how learners, teachers, government, corporates, and all stakeholders do come to the party to just make sure that online learning is something that takes the country forward. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.